Greetings and welcome to the second segment of this three-part interview series with Dr. Mark Carlson and Dr. Dennis Hannon on the topic of DBT and chronic pain. In this section, Mark and Dennis explore the concepts of distress tolerance and emotion regulation. In particular, our interviewees explain the terms behavioral activation, just noticeable change, skills implementation plan, and SMART goals. Throughout this segment, Mark and Dennis emphasize the importance of utilizing games, metaphors, and creativity when teaching DBT skills and concepts. Another major skill set in DBT is distress tolerance. And of all populations, I would think that our chronic pain clients would benefit from some serious distress tolerance. How do you guys apply that skill set?
I think the distress tolerance skills are a particularly salient and helpful skill set for this population. It is also a difficult skill set to teach as well. Our clients in this population are experiencing not just the emotional pain that we would sometimes maybe see in a typical adherent style DBT program, but also extreme physical pain oftentimes, coupled with that existential and spiritual pain. Again, kind of that demoralization process, the directionless that sometimes we see with these folks. It is an integral and holistic type of pain that goes throughout their entire existence. So when we look at the distress tolerance skills, I think really looking beyond just how to effectively manage anger or effectively manage anxiety, we have to look at the entire person as we're treating and working with these folks. That's where I think starting with a conversation about that existential pain can be extremely helpful. Again, going back to that idea we've been mentioning of what is the life that you want to be present in and how do we support you in getting there? Now, when it comes to the application of that, a lot of times what I will do with clients is sit down with them and take a look at what are you doing in your life right now that's working and what isn't working? And how do we help you institute some of these skills in your life in perhaps a more reactive way initially and move that towards a process of proactive engagement with these skills, allowing themselves to see in hindsight maybe moments where they could have used these skills and then move towards a place of beginning to use a skill when anxiety pops up or when pain pops up or when anger pops up, and then eventually getting them to that place of that proactive use of the skills. I find skills implementation plans to be particularly helpful for facilitating this type of a change, where we're asking them to take a look at the different intensities of various emotions and various sensations, including pain. So when a pain is at a 10, what are the different skills that you can utilize to help support yourself in that moment? And when pain's at a 1, how do you support yourself in that moment? And we'll break that down. We'll start with pain, because typically that is the most salient thing, physical pain that is, and then we will kind of branch off into some of the more emotional pains and existential pains that they might be experiencing too.
Sure. And Kirby, if you don't mind, I'll jump in. I got a few things on this too. When we're talking about a chronic pain population with distress tolerance, most DBT therapists are taught, hey, we use distress tolerance when you have a scale of distress from 0 to 10, 10 being high, where individuals are experiencing distress in that 8, 9, 10 range. The first thing that I teach people is you have one job and one job only if you're in that 8, 9, 10 phase. Stay safe, don't make it worse. That is your one thing you need to do. Most things will improve if you just go by rule number one. If you stay safe and just don't actively make it worse, oftentimes distress will just come down. So the first priority is always safety. But then what we start talking about doing in when we're teaching distress tolerance is we have a lot of our clients ask, well, I'm already doing all this stuff. Well, yes, most people are. But most people are doing this stuff in the realm of avoidance. And we have to teach the difference between skills and avoidance. Avoidance is using escape, avoid, alter, one of those three things to modify your experience so you experience less pain. Well, a lot of these skills will do that because we're distracting people, we're engaging in other things. But what distress tolerance is a very mindful-based approach that I am going to try to be skillful to stay safe and not make it worse, to bring my distress down. And when I bring my distress down, this is where it's different than avoidance, is now my intention is to go in and actively problem solve what was triggering my distress. Because now I can see things clearer. I'm not in high enough distress to where my functioning is significantly impaired. And what I'm starting to look at doing, going, okay, now I can actually engage in higher order problem solving. So distress tolerance is also taught in the vein of using it as a gateway to the other skill sets or the other modules in DBT. Stay safe, don't make it worse. Now it can be a gateway to problem solving and other skill sets. So if we're doing that, we can take a strength-based approach, but we have to teach that difference of avoidance and distraction or skill-based interventions. That is a big difference for distress tolerance. And then when Dennis is talking about an SIP or a skills implementation plan, what this is it's mapping out somebody's distress from zero, meaning I have none, all the way up to 10, where either I have the most distress possible or I'm unsafe. And we have skill-based interventions at every numerical value from zero to 10. Some of the skill sets are reactive, like what you would typically see in distress tolerance. But this is where we teach it very differently. We'll teach distress tolerance at an 8, 9, 10 level, but we'll also teach it at a 0, 1, 2, 3 level to where we can use it in a proactive manner, where 8, 9, 10 is a reactive manner. Then that way, when they're engaged in distress, which what most of us experience is in those middle areas, they can not only have to be reactive, but now they have a choice of using skills in a proactive manner as well. So it's a few different ways to teach distress tolerance in those regards.
Yeah, I really like all that. And you're right, Mark. DBT, in some ways, is a reactive approach, but it's teaching a different set of reactions, skilled or mindful reactions. But it's also a proactive approach that speaks to the cope ahead skill. It's both because our clients need both. So something else that both of you have mentioned is that your clients that are struggling with physical pain, they're also struggling with emotional pain or spiritual pain or existential pain. So those of us that are in the medical or mental health professions, we obviously fully realize this mind-body connection. We see it all, see it every day. How do you guys apply emotion regulation to chronic pain? Do you find that helping someone with depression or anxiety or some other kind of emotional anguish is related to and helps ameliorate their physical pain?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the ways that we start looking at emotion regulation is creating positive experience in somebody's life is one of the primary tools of this approach. When you're looking at probably 90% of whatever population you're working with are coming in with some degree of demoralization, it's a primary issue for a lot of our clientele where they don't have a lot of positives to look for. It's a very miserable experience day in and day out, and they've been worn down. Oftentimes they have to defend because you can't see their pain. They have to defend that, look, I have it. A lot of people are looking at them and refer to them as malingering or making something up, or you're just trying to avoid and getting out of responsibility. It constantly wears people down. Emotion regulation skills can be taught in, let me create some positive experiences in my own life, create some more life that is worth living and going through the experiences that I have every day. But also I teach this in regards of if we're going to look for sustainable change in somebody's life, emotion regulation can be a great springboard for that. Because what I want to do is create some momentum in my own life by building a positive or doing something that's masterful, where something where I can feel like I can make a difference in my own life. And then stepping back and appreciating the step that you just took. There's a lot of different clinicians who have created other skills. One here that I teach oftentimes in emotion regulation is a skill called just noticeable change. Is that if you were to do one small thing in your life that would lead to a positive or neutral experience, that's very important, that would lead to a positive or neutral experience, what small step could you take Then I want a firm commitment that you can take to it. And now let's take that step and let's see where we got from that. Because there are times, and why I say neutral is very important, there are times where clients talk to us about, wow, you talk about building a life worth living or getting something positive in my life. I just want the pain to go away. The pain's got to stop, or I need a break, and something positive is beyond their reach. So here's where we can step back and use the skill sets in Emotion Reg to talk about, let's create something neutral where you can just get a space that's not necessarily free from pain, but where pain is not in the driver's seat, where pain is not the only thing you're experiencing. Emotion regulation can help us create a dual experience where I have pain and something else that I'm creating. Now we can start to focus with mindfulness on, let's start to focus on what you just created that is different than your pain and start building on that. Where we still agree, you still have pain, but that doesn't have to be the primary focus. A lot of times, emotion regulation and the skills taught in these modules can help us take those initial steps.
Yeah, I would reiterate what Mark is saying here. I think of all the skill sets in DBT, emotion regulation may be second to interpersonal effectiveness, potentially standing on its own, might be my favorite to teach, because I do think it allows us to pull in more of that life that the client wants to be present in. And going back to what we mentioned a minute ago, I think it allows us to be a little bit more proactive in terms of creating that space that the client wants to be in, rather than just in a constant space of pain and suffering. This is where we pull in a great deal of focus on SMART goals. Mark already mentioned that just noticeable change goal. We're able to integrate as well a lot of different types of therapies here, including behavioral activation, to start to create that change for the client. This is where I get really excited, because I think this is one of the places where we start to see some initial movement and energy from clients. And when we see that, it allows us to build on that to create that momentum that Mark is discussing here.
And Kirby, I would just throw one last thing in here is, we've created some additional worksheets that are specific to our clinics. And I have them in one of my books, I think. But what we talk about is this concept of my story. And we have clients map out, hey, what got you to this point in your life where you're meeting me? That's the first part of my story. Now, what do you start and how do you start envisioning that story to potentially change? What are some options that you would just hope for, that you would wish for? Let's start adding that to the story. And then what we do through the skill sets and through goals and objectives is we start to operationalize those small steps that they can take to start making some noticeable change in their life. We call the just noticeable change skill set the What About Bob skills. Is, if you ever saw that movie, What About Bob, is it's taking the smallest steps towards something that you want in your life. And pretty soon you're starting to build momentum toward something instead of trying to run away from something. Sometimes it makes the skills much easier to teach if you can find stuff in pop culture to relate it to. And that's why we try to do skill training in a very reflective and reciprocal manner, to where they're constantly interjecting themselves into the skills teaching stories so you can understand what they're learning from this, and they'll tell you their barriers to where we can help problem solve. That's why the skill training components of DBT need to be very interactive and reciprocal, because they'll tell us their barriers and why they don't want to work on something. And in emotion regulation, we really get to see, if we step back and just listen, we really get to see that risk versus reward play out. Is that if the reward isn't worth the risk, I will not take the step toward change. That reward has to be big enough for them to take those What About Bob or those baby steps or those just noticeable change steps.
And that's where I think mindfulness is integral to this process of emotion regulation, because I think oftentimes we have to support the clients in their process of redefining what change looks like. So being aware of their relationship with this idea of change, what they expect in terms of their ability to change, what changes they want in their lives, reworking that with them towards this idea of just noticeable change. So taking those baby steps in support of that emotion regulation adapting the idea of what exercise can mean, adapting the idea of what healthy eating or healthy sleep looks like. When we're living with chronic pain, obviously it permeates all of those different areas. And many times clients go through their own journey of readapting and remodifying that process and definition of change to themselves.
I love everything I'm hearing. So not just metaphors and games in your groups, you're also adding in movies. That's great. I would love to be in your DBT groups. I feel very validated because when I run DBT groups, I'm doing the same stuff. I thought I was the only DBT therapist out there that was showing movies and playing games in the middle of a group.
I learned early on, Kirby, that I'm a big proponent and one of the first ones around in the clinics, at least here in Minnesota, that goes back to the 90s and says, you need to be tracking outcome. And if you're not tracking outcome, how do you know what you're doing is effective or not? One of the ways that we have seen our effectiveness increase, where I'll match our outcomes with pretty much anything I've ever seen, is we take creative approaches and we're active in this. It's not just there is one right way to do therapy. I don't believe there is a right way to do therapy. There's an effective way to do therapy. And that's what we talk about. That's part of our culture, is if you're looking for right or wrong, oftentimes life is much more complicated than that. That's where we take it back to the creative side. You have very creative ways to cope with your pain. Let's learn from that, figure out where it's working, and rinse and repeat that. And where it's not working, well, let's start just accidentally. And oftentimes, we have to get creative. And one of the ways that we do it is I'll say, okay, I want you to try this skill. Accidentally, if it worked, how would we know? And oftentimes, people will take a risk on accident that it may work because they're afraid, oftentimes, one, that it won't work and they're stuck with what they're doing. But we also need to address the fear of what happens if it works and it is effective. Now, people will increase their expectations of you. There's more pressure on you. And if we don't find some light-hearted ways of doing, some creative ways of doing this, we really miss opportunities to talk about the fear and how difficult it is to make targeted change in your own life. We need to be creative and stop focused on, well, is there a right way to teach this skill? Well, I have no idea. Why don't you consult the expert in the room? And that's the client. So ask them, hey, here's what the skill is in the book or what this person wrote. How do you make sense of that? How are we going to work on that together? When you have that togetherness, you're not talking about right or wrong. You're talking about what works and what doesn't. And I'd rather focus my therapeutic energy there than focus on, well, there's a right way to teach something or a right way to do something, if that makes sense.
Sure does. I want to make sure I heard you guys correctly. Even if a client is showing up with chronic physical pain as their presenting problem, chances are that chronic physical pain is a symptom of deeper emotional pain. Did I hear you correct on that?
I think it's complicated. I wouldn't get into one causes the other or in regard to that. I think in terms of what we were talking, and Dennis, you can jump in for your own clarity. But I think chronic pain is very complex in how it presents. And if somebody says, well, I just have physical pain. Well, okay, let's explore a little bit. Where are you at on the relational aspect of pain, the psychological aspect, the spiritual aspect, the emotional aspect, and then the meaning and purpose aspect of pain? Because oftentimes it's easier to talk about physical pain than it is to talk about any other level of pain. And usually it's been my experience that if there's physical pain, there's other pain that tends to be attached. We just oftentimes don't talk about it because when we're talking about CBT or DBT for chronic pain, we're rethinking the entire approach to pain because before we started to really target chronic pain with CBT, and with DBT as one of the parts of third wave, there was a Cartesian model of pain. You have an injury, there's some form of tissue damage, then there is pain. And when there's pain, there's a loss of functioning. So we target the tissue damage and we target the physical aspect of pain only. And when that is removed, all pain is gone. Well, what we know about pain now in a biopsychosocial format, which is currently how a lot of the United States is starting to look and rethink our entire approach to chronic pain, it's much more complicated than just physical pain. That's how I would address that. I wouldn't get into, well, if you have physical pain, then you have this other pain. I would look at, oftentimes it's much more complicated than just that, but it's possible it could just be physical pain and there is nothing else.
Yeah, I think as Mark, you're talking, the word that continues to pop up into my head is complicated. I think there are certainly cases and situations where that physical pain will lead to that emotional and existential pain. I think vice versa as well. That existential and emotional pain can certainly lead to physical pain. We clearly have seen that across time. That being said, I think for most of the clients that we tend to see that come to our programming, those folks have already gotten to a place where maybe they've gone through the healthcare system and have received some type of a chronic pain diagnosis. And so the folks that we're seeing, there is a physical sense of pain. The work that we do here is less concerned with what caused or led to the onset of that pain and is more focused on the current adaptations and functioning in relation to that pain. And that goes for all types of pain, physical pain, emotional pain, existential pain. We are focused on helping the person really readapt their relationship to all types of pain.
There are three main points from this section. First, distress tolerance is all about staying safe without making things even worse. The purpose of distress tolerance is to replace ineffective reactivity with more effective reactivity. Distress tolerance is applied mindfulness and a gateway to other DBT skills. If clients can first survive the moment without making it worse, they are more likely to access their capacity for higher order problem solving. A skills implementation plan helps clients quantify their distress on a scale of 0 to 10 and then determine a specific skills-based intervention for each level of intensity. Second, whereas distress tolerance refers to short-term interventions, emotion regulation refers to long-term lifestyle changes which foster a healthier emotional baseline. The ABC acronym helps clients develop healthier emotional habits by adding positives, building mastery, and coping ahead. SMART is another acronym which helps clients activate healthier behaviors by setting goals which are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound. Behavioral changes do not need to be massive. They simply need to be just noticeable in order to initiate the necessary momentum for change. And third, additional techniques for stimulating behavioral activation include the following. Have the client promise to do something they would have done anyway. Prescribe the client a positive behavior, which they are already doing. Help clients evaluate the risks versus rewards of attempting a new behavior. Use creativity to teach new skills, such as games and metaphors. And ask clients, what would happen if you accidentally used the skill?